everybody. Welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. My name is Rob, and with me as always is Jason.
Hey, Rob.
How's it going, Jason?
I guess it's going okay.
Yeah?
We're making a podcast. I still am kind of enamored by that idea.
Is that what we're doing?
It is.
I didn't realize.
It'd be funnier if I said that, because you're the one that like makes the audio files. Then again, I'm the one that posts it to the website, so right. Not really funny if either of us
I don't know what you do with these things after I send them to you.
Somehow they end up on the web.
On the interwebs. Yeah.
Yeah.
What you been playing, man?
What have I been playing? I have been currently addicted to an iPhone app.
Oh, really?
I must admit.
Okay.
And I know we sometimes talk about video games.
Yeah.
So it's called Book of Heroes.
Okay.
Basically, it's like an RPG, right? It's an online RPG.
Okay.
And they recently just did a huge, massive update, and they allowed guilds. So for the first time, you can, like, physically interact with other players. Like, you can go on raids and stuff a la WoW. Okay. But they did a really good job of balancing it for the idea that people aren't going to play your game constantly.
Yeah.
Because it's on their phone.
Right.
Like, they're going to play it sometimes during the day. So,
for like they did 5 or 10 minutes at a time,
kind of. Yeah. It's okay. Not like they, like a raid in WoW. Like, you get either 10 or 25 people together, and at the same time, you go to a place and you do something, and it's got to be very choreographed and stuff. And
mm-hmm.
So when I heard they're going to do raids and guilds, I was like, how are they going to pull that off? Well, basically, there's a bad guy. You start the raid, quote, and then you've got like 6 hours to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
So over the course of 6 hours, people come in and they play at their leisure.
Okay.
And then in the end, you get points and stuff. And the game has become super addictive to me now that they've released this ability to play with others. It's just kind of makes it more fun. It's not just like I'm out here by myself, and they have challenges you can do and bonuses you can get by working together, and it's kind of this sense of community. And then they have like a leaderboard.
Okay.
And like right now we're ranked like number 2 on the server.
Ooh.
And I'm ranked like number 40 out of 80,000 players, which
wow.
tells you how addicted I am to the game.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah. So there are people I'd like to talk to at some point, because what's interesting to me about it is the idea of designing a game where you've got the ability, like, they take feedback from people.
Uh-huh.
Like, some of us actually complained because there were these kinds of tokens you were getting, and you couldn't do anything with them, really. Like, you spent them, and you're like, wow, what a waste. I'm just getting these for no reason. And they were like, somebody was like, I wish there was an exchange system where you could turn these into something else. And they were like, okay. And 24 hours later, it was installed in the game, you know? Okay. I mean, so the idea of designing a game continually, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like, it's out there, but you can just keep adding to it. Not like expansion packs or something for, like, mm-hmm. a board game, but, like, literally, like, you just keep tweaking the core rules.
Well, a lot of online games, like a lot of big MMOs, like I think WoW is pretty famous for that, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I mean, WoW, from what because I used to play WoW like really heavily. By the way, the nice thing about this compared to WoW is because it's on my phone, it's portable.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like I have to be stuck in a room sitting there by myself.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But no, WoW, they did that, but I feel like the feedback is a little more direct on this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's 80,000 players in the game, but not all of them are active.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not all that are really active, like, you know, like I am and some other people.
Mm-hmm.
So we're giving you, I feel like our feedback kind of, you know, bubbles to the top.
Makes more of an impact.
So yeah okay. exactly.
How is it played? Is it 3D? Is it 2D? I mean, do you have a little guy running around?
No, or? it's actually like there's a setting and you, like you're in a town and then you go out to the world and there's a bunch of doorways you can click and that takes you in another area and there's places you can fight. And when mm-hmm. you fight, you click a button, you pop in, and now it's turn-based back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually timeline-based. So like each attack takes X number of seconds.
Okay.
And so do the enemies. So like you're trying to budget your time based on theirs to stop them from attacking, right? I play this like roguish character. So like he's all quick and fast and stuff and mm-hmm. I try and stab people and... But basically, the bad guys are like on a card. They almost looks like a magic card, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then there's little animations, like when they bite you, like these teeth fly on the screen, and it's okay. well done, you know. And and it's a fun game to play, and
okay.
it's just one of those games that's kind of addictive, you know. So
yeah,
it's an interesting game, and it's an interesting idea that you can, you know, continually keep changing your game to please people.
That's good.
But they, you know, of course, have a very direct line, which is good when you want feedback. Mm-hmm. But not good when people are unhappy and they just want to complain to you. So, you know,
yeah.
it's kind of a double-edged sword.
This is iPhone only? iOS, I should say.
Okay. I think it's Android, too. Is it? I would guess, yeah. I'm not 100% on that, but I bet it is. Yeah. You know what? No, it is. Because I've seen in the FAQs they talk about that, because they were having some issues with the Android stuff. So.
Is it free to play, or is it...
I want to say it's free to play, and then it's got in-game purchases, so you can buy stuff in-game if you want to.
Microtransactions.
Yeah, you certainly don't need to. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not, like, necessary to do well at the game to do that.
I apologize to the listeners. Some jerkwad probably just heard, drove by with a really, really loud car engine that we heard.
I thought it was a motorcycle.
Might have been a motorcycle. We have Snuggies over the windows, so I can't tell. But I apologize. I didn't think that would be so loud in the microphone.
Yeah, but it was. It's a good mic. It's a good mic. Yes, yeah. It is. So, so that's my, what about you? What have you been playing?
Well, a few things. Obviously, I'm still playing Dragon's Dogma, but I talked about that enough last week. I don't need to do that again. A few weeks back, I mentioned Quadify.
Yeah.
It was that kind of Tetris-y block game that we got when we were Mackinac. A few nights ago, my wife and I, we were just hanging out and having a drink at home. And when I bought that game, and I liked it a lot right away, but then after playing a little bit, I kind of thought, oh, geez, well, you know, maybe I'll never play this again. Maybe I shouldn't have spent the money on it.
Right.
So we were just going to hang out and listen to some music and just chat and play a game. That's what we like to do that on the weekends. And so before we got out Carcassonne, which is what we usually go for, I grabbed that off the shelf. And having been away from it for a couple of weeks and then coming back to it was a lot better.
Oh, good.
Yeah, because we both understood it now, you know. We both knew that we weren't trying to make a solid block. We were trying to mess each other up. And it was a much better game. And it plays real fast.
Mm-hmm.
It plays real fast. We were able to get through. I think we probably played 6 or 8 games in a row real fast. And it was easy, and we could talk and kind of trash talk each other the whole time. And it was super easy to play while a little intoxicated, you know. If anything, that makes it a little more fun because your hands are a little shaky and you don't want to knock stuff over. Like Jenga when you're drunk.
Right.
That's when Jenga's best. So that was great. The other one, and I brought this up here with me, it's a game called Shut the Box. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Oh, yeah. I actually have a different version of that game. But yeah.
There are a million versions of this game available out right. there. Right. And I like it. It's a solitaire game. I mean...
See, and the one I have is actually built for 2 players.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so for the people listening, if you don't know what Shut the Box is, it's a dice game. You have a box... And in that box are a series of tabs numbered 1 to 9. And I've actually seen versions of this where they're numbered up to 12.
Yep, the one I have is
okay. So mine is you have these tabs numbered 1 to 9, and they're kind of on a pivot, so you can turn them over to hide them. And you have 2d6, and you roll the dice in the box, okay? Yep. And like I just rolled, I rolled a 6, a 4, and a 2, okay? And what you're doing is you're trying to turn over all the numbers to put them face down. So to do that, I have a total of 6. I could just put down the 6 number, or I could put down...
The 4 and the 2.
The 4 and the 2, or I could put down the 1, the 2, and the 3. I have to put down numbers that add up to the total of 6.
Excellent.
Okay.
Now what if you can't?
Well, that's the thing. You keep rolling the dice until you get to a point where you can't put any more numbers down, then you lose. Okay, then I should say your turn is over, and then I just threw some numbers down... And I have a 1, a 3, a 6, an 8, and a 9 still standing. And uh-huh. I rolled something and I'm done. I can't do anything else. So my score is 13,689 points.
Oh, so you want to get rid of the 1.
Well, yeah, you want to get rid of everything. Right. So whoever has the lowest score after a certain number of rounds is the winner. If you get all the tabs down at a time, you're calling that shutting the box. And you get 0 points, and some people would say you could even, depending on how you want to play the game, you could get a minus to your score to lower your score even further.
Okay, cool.
And so it's an easy solitaire kind of game that you can just do. It's just kind of fun to poke at it here and there. You can play it 2-player. You could play as many people as you want. And one thing you can do is you can bet on it, or you can wager on it. You know, you can say let's each play 3 rounds, and whoever has the lowest or the lowest score is the winner and wins the pot, you know?
Okay.
They say it's the kind of game that the English would play in pubs and, you know, in the 1600s.
That makes sense.
Pirates would play it on
the ship. It's a nice wooden box, too, to make you feel that way.
Yeah, right. That's how this one is all styled.
But, right.
Yeah. And so after playing some Quadify, we played that. I also like this particular set that I have because it's all made out of wood and wood dice and wood box and wood tabs and metal hardware on it. And it's, it, you know, it just kind of feels good. But I just wanted to mention it, I think, because it's easy to play. You know, there's basically no rules. You just roll the die
right.
and turn the things over. So it's easy to do some math. But it's also a solitaire game. There aren't too many solitaire games out there, really. You know, and sometimes it's fun to to think about that. Can I talk about another game too?
If you want to, yeah.
Okay, this one I actually haven't played yet.
You're like, I've played 10,000 games this week.
No, just those. The one I want to talk about is Cards Against Humanity.
Right.
I just bought this. I haven't played it yet. For anybody out there, it's basically apples to apples. For horrible people.
As it says in the box.
It says Cards Against Humanity, a party game for horrible people. So it's the same idea as apples to apples. You have a description, and then you have a word to match it. But in Cards Against Humanity, you have a scenario, and I'll pull one randomly out of the box. We'll try and keep it clean. So the scenario would be, in 1,000 years, when paper money is but a distant memory, blank will be our currency. Okay?
All right.
That's a black card.
Yep.
And so everybody else then would pull a white card.
Yep.
And so in 1,000 years when paper money is but a distant memory, blank will be our currency. How about mutually assured destruction? Or I'll pull another one randomly out of here. Active listening.
Eventually finding ones that aren't that bad.
I know. Or a zesty breakfast burrito.
I would take that for currency.
I would too. I would love a zesty burrito now. Yeah, man, that's great. Let's pull another one out of here. I don't think I want to say that on the show. Some of these are pretty vulgar. Here's another one. Okay. Take backsies. In 1,000 years, when paper money is but a distant memory, take backsies will be our currency.
Nice, nice.
It's the game, it's the version of apples to apples that I think everybody always really wanted to play.
Well, it's the version that we all try to play, right?
Right, but the game doesn't let us get that nasty.
No.
I happened to pick very nice family-friendly cards out of that batch.
There are some not, I know, because I looked through it before, and there are some very not from, but, I mean, it says right on the box, it's a game for 17 plus.
Yeah, ages 17 and up.
And it's a good, it looks like it'd be a fun game. I look forward to playing it. Probably at a party where you're drinking a little.
Excuse me, yeah, we're having a lot of family come from out of town for the 4th of July. Some cousins and aunts and uncles, and they can be pretty vulgar. So I think we're going to bust this out for the family.
Awesome.
I'm excited about it. Anyway, I wanted to mention that. I haven't played it yet. I'm super pumped to play it soon. I recommend anybody out there to do that.
And it sells really fast online.
It does, yeah. I think this I got in on their third or fourth printing, and it may already be sold out. I don't know. Go to, I think it's cardsagainsthumanity.com. You can see examples of some cards there. You can get on their mailing list, and they'll let you know the next time it's back in print. It sells out so fast because it's cool. It's very cool. But yeah. Anyway, that's all I got for that.
Excellent. Well. I think we can move on then to the next segment.
Did you forget what that is?
Called Mechanic of the Week.
Mechanic of the Week.
But I really almost said practicing the pitch.
Yeah, no, we're not there yet, dummy.
This is why you do the talking.
That's right,
Interject opinions.
I have a thing on the computer screen that tells me what to do.
He's not even lying. He does have a thing that tells him what to say.
I load that up every time. Mechanic of the Week. It's my turn, right?
Yes.
Okay, playing Shut the Box, and we never play it as a betting game, but knowing that it was always intended to be a betting game originally, I thought I might talk about wagering or betting in games, which is something that you do, you know, in traditional card games, poker and blackjack and all that sort of stuff.
Yep.
But not necessarily something you do often in tabletop games. in the kinds of games that we would normally be playing.
Right. I can see that.
And so I wanted to ask the question, I mean, we all know what betting is, you know, you're betting that against the odds that you might have a better hand than somebody else, or you might get a higher score than somebody else. Right.
Right.
So, and if you win, you get money or you get tokens or whatever. And if you lose, you lose money or tokens or whatever.
Right.
So I wanted to talk about that and bring up that subject to discuss. We'll think about what kinds of games have we played apart from just poker and blackjack that have wagering in them, and is that worthwhile? Is there something that we might be interested in betting that we could add to any of these ideas that we've had, or could we come up with something, a betting game from that, if that makes sense?
Didn't you, one of the games we talked about, sorry, you didn't pitch this, Gravediggers, wasn't that betting?
Yeah, that has a little bit of betting in it. It's sort of a version of it. You have to, you kind of place a wager based on how much treasure value you think is hidden in a specific graveyard.
Okay.
But you know, you can cheat in that game, of course, by playing cards to look at what cards are there. So you might have some idea. So the betting is not necessarily based on what the hand is. You're betting that you are lower than everybody else, but not so low that you lose out, I guess. But yeah, I mean, there is kind of a betting or a wagering mechanic in that game. That's true.
Here's an interesting idea for a game mechanic. Mm-hmm. I will plan on stealing now and putting in a game somehow. Sure. So, everyone antes a card, right? Mm-hmm. Face down. You know what card you're putting out. Nobody else does.
Mm-hmm.
Then you all bet on that pool of cards, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and everybody's forced to put a card down, right? So, you put a card down and know you're going to bet on that. So you know whether or not you want the card. In fact, maybe it'd be fun if you had to randomly put a card down, right?
Okay.
Like your opponent would pick a card out of your hand. You get to see it.
Mm-hmm. You see what they're taking.
Yeah. And then they put it away. They put it down.
So they don't know what they drew.
It's like it's like blind man's poker, where you've got the card in your head.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you can see everyone else's card, but you can't see your own.
Mm-hmm.
So you would know what your card was, and you'd be betting whether or not you wanted to take that card. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. the other people's cards, they could have junk, or you could, you know, you could be like, my card was junk, but what if they've got good cards, right?
Mm-hmm. So would you be offering to buy someone else's card, or
you'd be basically be offering to buy the stack of cards. So like,
oh, the whole
if
stack.
There are four players, four cards face down. Every player knows what their card is.
Okay.
But they don't know what other ones is. So maybe you fake people out. Maybe you bet high, like your card's really good.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody will finally bet above you, and then they're wasting their funds trying to bid on something you know is bad for your card. But you don't know what everybody else's card is. I don't know. It just sounds interesting to me.
Yeah, that could be explored. Yeah,
different mechanic.
Yeah. So you would have cards in your hand.
Maybe some sort of game where you had like fences working, like a.
Fences?
Oh, sorry, when I say fence, like thieves and fences.
Okay,
like,
all right.
Not like a fence to keep things out, but like a fence, like I sell stolen goods.
Yeah, okay.
So, like, you're all some sort of, I don't know, crime-ish type mob people maybe, right?
Uh-huh.
And someone is stealing your stuff. So, they steal some of your stuff, and now you're trying to bid to this fence to get it back, right? So maybe if you had a game like last week you pitched that rummy style game.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if you had a rummy style game where it was a pair making, you know, a matchmaking game, and in that game at the end of every round that happens. So you've got to determine whether or not you want your stuff back or not.
Hmm.
And then maybe you don't want your stuff back, but maybe you really want to see what else other people have, or maybe you know somehow what other people might have based on, because if they've got cards laid out in front of them, right, you
mm-hmm.
know what they have possibly in their hand. And what they don't have, if they haven't laid it down. So at the end of the round, if everyone's laid their cards down, right?
Okay.
Yeah, just a thought.
Or what if you're see, I'm not sure if that's betting. But I guess it's kind of betting. So, okay, so you start with a full deck of cards, and everybody draws one card from the top of the pile.
Mm-hmm.
And they can look at that card. They can't see anybody else's card, and then you just go ahead and put it down.
Okay. Oh, that's a better way. Right. I like that.
And
yeah.
then so you know what your card is, but you don't know anybody else's card is. And so then you're spending money. You're saying, you know, I'll give this much. Well, and you know, so you would be betting to wager, or whoever's willing to pay the most. So it wouldn't really be betting, that'd be bidding. Be bidding on the hand.
Well, but bidding is betting. I mean,
yeah, but it's kind of a different point of view on betting. You know, bidding is you're saying I'm willing to spend this much money to get that. Not I bet you this much money that I'm going to do better than you. Bidding, okay. Versus, yeah.
Okay.
So you're bidding on that hand. So that those four cards then make up a hand, and then you get that hand of cards you can then play with.
See, to me, like when I think of betting, I mean, yeah, there's the, you know, my hand could be better than your hand, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's your typical betting scenario, like poker. Right. But I was thinking like, like Storage Wars, the board game, right? Storage Wars, the show on A&E, I think.
Oh, man, yeah.
Great show. I mean, basically, it's the same type of setup, right?
Yeah.
They're bidding based on limited information.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're saying, you know, so to me, that's kind of like a bet, right? It's like, it's a gamble.
It's a gamble.
When I think gamble, I think bet.
Okay, yeah. Well, see, yeah, I would say there's a difference between betting and gambling. I mean, betting is gambling, but gambling is not always betting. Well, oh gosh, man, we're talking about semantics now, aren't we?
Yeah.
That's tough. We probably shouldn't get that deep into arguing right. that. We should talk about games. Okay, let's keep going with this. So you're bidding on a hand of cards, right? Okay. To give some people some idea as to what might be in there, you could have four different card types, and each different card type would be have a different color back, right? So everybody knows what card type that is, but nobody knows what the actual card text is.
Okay.
You know? And so you're bidding on what you think might be beneficial.
Right.
So whoever wins that first hand gets that first hand, then that guy is out of the next round of bidding until there's only one guy left. And then you can play a round of the game with those four cards in your hand. And then based on how that plays, you win whatever money was paid in the pot to get those cards.
Okay.
That's what I'm thinking.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. And that's how you get money. So then everybody's played all four of their cards, or if you haven't played a card but the hand is over, you put those in this card, and then everybody draws out one more and you start again.
That makes sense.
And you play until somebody's out, or until there's only one guy left with money.
Yeah. Hence your betting.
Right. Now, that's one of the things, though, that the reason that I hate Texas Hold'em is because you have to play until there's only one guy left.
Right.
I get bored before that.
I've seen you play. You don't last that long.
No, it's true, though. If people, I've been invited to poker parties before. Say, oh, yeah, we're going to play Hold'em. Okay, yeah, great. You know, I'll play poker. I'll hang out with you guys, whatever. But after about 2 hours, I'm done.
Right. Yeah, it's tough.
I'm done. And I just stop trying, you know. I'll bet on a hand without even looking at my cards, you know. Just because I just want to leave. I'm done. I've had enough of playing this. I don't want to play the same game for 2 hours.
Right.
Much less like 10 or 12 hours like some people do.
Right.
That drives me crazy. Anyway.
So, the other game that came to mind when you talked about that was Liar's Dice.
See, I've never played that.
But you know how it functions?
I think so.
Pirate's Dice, it can be said either way.
Yeah, right.
So basically you have a set number of dice. I don't know how many it is.
I'm not sure either.
Maybe 5 or 6.
Something like that.
And you've got a cup, and even your hands, and you know, shake the dice, and boom, you slap them down. Right. And then you look at your dice, mm-hmm. and you wager based mm-hmm. on, you know, I have 2 ones.
Yeah.
Somebody's like, I have 3 twos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you just keep going around until somebody finally calls BS on you, basically.
Mm-hmm. But you're betting on the total number of that on the table, not just in your hand?
No, you're betting on, you're saying what you have in your hand.
Are you? I thought you were betting based on the total number of dice on the table.
Yeah, I should have done more research on this game if I was going
to
talk about it.
Neither one of us played it, so I'm not sure.
And neither one of us knew ahead of time. To be honest, my total exposure to the game is they played it in the Pirates of the Caribbean.
Well, me
movies.
Too, yeah. And I didn't even understand it when I was watching that.
It looked really interesting, though, when
yeah.
they played it.
It looked like a pirate game.
Yeah.
There's a game that I did get a few years ago. It's called Gambling? I'm in! It's a deck of fantasy themed playing cards. It's not a standard deck of 52 cards with, you know, hearts and diamonds and spades and stuff. It's a deck of cards specifically themed with knights and princesses and merchants and rogues and bards. Okay, and they different suits. They're different colors. There are different animal symbols and different magic symbols on the cards. So it's a deck of cards, and it also comes with a rule book that gives you, like, I think there are like 12 or 14 different games, different card games you can play with that deck. And the idea is that I think it's a part of the Red Dragon Inn, which is Slugfest Games. I think that's what it was.
Okay.
Part of the Red Dragon Inn series of games that they have, which I think is a role-playing game thing. But it's intended to be versatile, that you can use it as a fantasy-themed game to play within your RPG.
Oh, so you have like a rogue who wants to gamble or something.
Yeah, right. You can do a quick game of that. And there's some real simple games. There's some real complicated games. And actually, the rulebook has some games you can just don't even need the cards to play. You can just play with some dice. And it's a pretty neat set. The thing is that the drawback to that was, though, that anytime if I was ever having a party and brought that set out and said, hey, you guys want to play some of this cool fantasy card game? Nobody really was interested in learning a new card game.
Right. They're like, let's play Euchre.
Yeah. Or let's play Blackjack. Or let's play something that everybody already knows how to play because it's a party. Nobody really cares that much.
And people were probably drinking.
Yeah, right. So that's a drawback. And I tried to use it in one game session, but I just couldn't make it work. You can't, when you're DMing a game, you can't force your players into a... It's not really fair to force your players into learning a new card game.
It's called the railroad system.
Right, yeah. So, but, I mean, it is... And everything is based... All the games require you to bet to play. I mean, you don't have to, but then whatever. Oh, you deal cards? Oh, now everybody turn them over. I win. Okay. You know, there's... all the fun comes from betting against each other.
Right.
That said, it's a nice set, the good quality cards, and the games that are in there are pretty fun. I liked them a lot.
Excellent.
That's probably enough about that. Okay. Anyway, betting, there's potential there. I don't think I'm ready to put that into anything that I'm going to do. Or if I did, I would make it optional. I don't...
Yeah, I mean, when I think about that type of thing, I think bidding. Like, I think bidding has... For a card game or a board game, I think bidding could be a really good way to do it. Betting seems a little harder to work in for a wager, you know?
Yeah.
Like, being able to just straight bid, like, who wants this card? Okay, I'll pay 5 gold for it. I'll pay 10. I'll pay 20.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wish I knew how to be an auctioneer. That'd be awesome. Yep, sure, $5, $5, $5, $1. I can't talk that. I can't talk that fast. I fumble over my words if I try and say something fast.
I think you can take a class for that.
I still don't think I could get better at it.
All right. Don't try then. Give up before you even start.
It's like beatboxing. I'll never be good at beatboxing. I really want to be, but it's never going to happen.
No, you're right. You're too white for that.
Basketball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You going to pitch a game tonight, or are we just going to keep rambling?
I can pitch a game.
Yeah, why don't you do that?
I have a game. I have a game. I'm going to be honest. I'm having some problems with the game. I think it's got a lot of potential.
Okay.
So we're just going to try and work through this. I have a lot of great ideas.
Uh-huh.
I think that are great.
You need some connective tissue, though.
Yeah, exactly. So right now it's tentatively called Kingdom Seasons, which is kind of a lame name, but it kind of describes what the game is.
Kingdom Seasons.
Yes. Okay. So it's a big box game, right? I mean, big it's box. A board game. Big box. You know, lots of pieces.
Okay.
Expensive as all get out.
I hope not. $60 game.
Sure.
Kickstarter. $120 game.
So, I mean, this seems like this would be a $50 game with all the pieces and stuff. But that's not that bad. I mean, I guess that's pretty... Depends. Yeah, a lot of the Euro games are $50-ish. Yeah. 40, 50. Okay, so the general setup of this game is it's a 2-4 player board game. I still haven't figured out how 2 players could possibly work. But we've talked before, we're committed to 2-player board games.
We like 2-player games, yeah.
So, I just don't think it sells real well if it has to be exactly 4 players.
Mm-hmm.
And right now it's got to be exactly 4 players.
Yeah.
But I'm confident that I could tweak it for less.
Okay.
So the idea is that you run a kingdom, and the board is made up of four pieces, your standard board that folds out into four pieces, except for these aren't connected.
Mm.
Each piece is double sided.
Okay.
It's got land on it, and it's got a castle in your far corner of it, right? And then it's got some information. It says what kingdom you are, and there's eight different kingdoms. So I'm picturing you would roll dice, and there would be just a number on each one, or maybe even you roll dice, highest one gets to choose first, down to the lowest who gets to choose last.
Mm-hmm.
But even your last person still has two choices,
yeah.
Right? Because mm-hmm. there's one side and another side. So on those are your different kingdoms you can use, and each kingdom specializes in different things, whether it's making different things, or being better at war or something like that. And each the game is based on seasons, right? Not talking like winter, fall, spring, summer. I'm talking about something different. And each house, each kingdom has its own favorite season, right? So the idea is the seasons are things like a season of war, of famine, of plague.
Oh, I get you. Okay.
Of love,
yeah.
Of insurrection, of magic, of valor. And those are the ones I have so far.
Yeah.
So the idea is that each season changes everything. So when a new season card comes up, which would be every few turns, you flip a new season card, boom. Everything changes. Now, in the center of the board is this marketplace. And I feel like I'm not really doing a good job of explaining the rules, but that's okay. I'm kind of explaining the idea.
Well, we're getting to that, yeah.
So in the center of the board, you got this marketplace. And so the boards would all match up, no matter which ones you had, which of the ones you picked.
You butt them together.
Yeah, the marketplace would always be in the center.
Okay.
And you just find a way to artistically make it match.
Sure.
So in the marketplace, you can buy and sell goods. At the beginning of the game, depending on what season it is,
mm-hmm.
you throw specific cards in the marketplace. But it's a limited marketplace. It's not like a bank. It's not like a Monopoly Bank or a Catan where you can go and... I mean, you could technically run out of cards in Catan, but somebody would really have to be hoarding them for that to happen. It's pretty much impossible.
Okay.
So this is this limited marketplace. So you start with these base cards based on what season it is. And then I go to the market. I trade stuff for other stuff because I've got a lot of one thing. And there's prices set in the market. So the marketplace has limited quantities of stuff. First come, first serve. So if you go to the market and I buy something, I'm going to trade cards into the market, some of my resources, for some of the resources of the market.
Mm-hmm.
Now my resources are there for you to get. Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay.
So like if I make a lot of weapons, for instance, because I'd like to make not the resources be like your standard like ore or lumber. Mm-hmm. I want the resources to be like weapons, horses, food. So more things that are already put together, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Commodities. More commodities, yeah. Yes, than resources, I guess. That's probably a better way to title it would be commodities.
Okay.
So if I've got, if like say I'm the people who have lots of horses, right?
Mm-hmm.
I may not want to trade horses in, even though it's easy, because I know it's going to be harder for you to get horses, and horses help you travel more, right?
And so each kingdom would already have a bonus to a specific commodity, producing
yes,
that commodity?
Okay. Exactly.
Great, okay.
And then each kingdom would have, so like I said, a favored season. So yeah. What happened when a new season came up, all the prices in the market would change.
Oh.
So like in a season of war, weapons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The market wants weapons.
Right.
In a season of love, maybe they don't want weapons, right? Because mm-hmm. nobody wants to fight. And then you also would restock. So like when you hit the season of love, it may say, take away all weapons that are in the marketplace, get rid of them and add in more food or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that those commodities go away.
Okay.
So you can still trade to them, right?
Yeah.
But it's a lot less wanted.
So you hope that the season of war doesn't come right after the season of love.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, you're trying to set up moves for how you're going to take down these other kingdoms. Because the goal of the game is to become the supreme emperor of all the kingdoms.
Yeah.
And to do that, you know, you're using different tactics, which we'll get into in a minute. But yeah, you could be like, I'm planning on doing this. Like, I'm going to attack. And then boom, season of love. Like, oh, crap.
Shoot.
You know, in the house, for instance, that has, like, war as their favorite season, probably love would be their non-favorite season. Uh-huh. And they would get negatives there. So you'd have a bunch of people, right? And there'd be a way to expand that as you went.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the board has different areas on it that you can claim. So you'd be sending your people out to claim territories and claim things. My thought is what that could help you get more commodities. Like maybe there's a place with fields where you can get more horses, or there's a place with iron where you get weapons, right? Rather than it being like, I get iron to make weapons, you get weapons from this place, right?
Yeah.
Something that gave me a good idea with that was Stone Age, where you could just get tools, right?
Sure.
And the ability to just go out and get tools instead of having to go make stuff, you know what I mean? Yeah. And get stuff to buy something. And something that always bothered me with games was the lack of travel, right? Like, you're playing an old-school fantasy game, right? Like, you're like a Catan or something. Like, I can always trade with the bank. I can always trade with the marketplace, basically. But what if no, it costs you a day to go to the market.
Like, it costs you, like... You gotta travel to the where it is. Yeah, sure.
So, the board would be based on distances, like, with, like, hashed marks out for it takes this long to get to a certain place. And you would have to, you know, like, so one of your guys could go two squares in a turn. Or you could spend a horse, which would allow you to go five. And the idea is that the commodities would be expendable, right? So, say I'm going to go to war with someone else, and there'd be mechanics for war. Like, if I'm going to go fight you over this territory that I'd like, because I want to keep getting horses from this territory, say, I could go there, and I could play weapon cards to give myself a bonus to get rid of your people. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yep.
So, yeah. So, like we said, I'm having a little trouble with kind of the connective tissue of this game to understand how exactly all the functionalities work. But I really like the idea.
I do too. I like it a lot. So the point is to conquer each other's, conquer your opponent's kingdoms.
Yes.
Okay. So the win scenario then is the first person to dominate the whole world. Or would you say to dominate three out of the four kingdoms?
Well, I was actually thinking that maybe the win scenario is the game ends after, like, so you've got your season cards, right? And every set number of turns, I was actually thinking two times around, right? So everyone goes twice for each season. And they make as many moves as they can in that season. So that way, if you need to, like, hermit for a season because it's your non-favored season, like it's your anti-season, you could do that, and it really wouldn't hurt you too much in the game. So there's, say there's 24 season cards, right? You would shuffle the deck, then you would lay down, say, six seasons face down, right? And then above that, you'd put, like, the final season, like, which would be a special card. And be like, this is what happens in the final season, right?
Oh, okay.
And you'd put that in between. Maybe it's a season of Armageddon. I don't know. Maybe it's like the season of victory, right? Yeah. So, like, that's the end of the game. So there would be six seasons every game that would never get called up. So if those are your if in there are your favorite seasons, that could really hurt you. But it's random.
Yeah.
And it means you can't plan for what seasons are coming.
Okay, so seasons are randomized every time. The game ends when you've been through all the seasons.
Yes.
And you have 24 seasons, but in any given game, you're only going to be using 18 of them.
Right.
Theoretically. So
that would be 36 turns.
36 turns.
Which,
based on the size of the complexity of this game, it would make sense that it's also a long game to play.
Right.
Yeah, that would make sense. You wouldn't, it's not the kind of thing you're going to want to end in 8 turns.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and another idea I was throwing around with it, and I still don't know if this is a good idea or not, was one of the commodities was people. But you don't know what you're getting when you get people, right? So, or maybe you do. The idea is you could go and you could get people out of the, you could trade for people in the marketplace. And they'd basically be citizens for your kingdom. Now, they wouldn't be your little widget guys, the little meeples that could run out and do stuff. They would be leaders, right? So maybe one of them is a knight. Or a war hero, so he can lead. Or maybe one of them is a banker, so he can help you with marketplace and stuff like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get you.
So it would add another level of complexity to the game, and it would add another level of anything could happen with the game. You know, I mean, you'd never have the same scenario twice, basically.
Right, yeah, sure.
But then I also don't want it to feel like it's just too much. Like, well, you're just throwing mechanics out there to throw mechanics out there, you know? Because I kind of feel like without it, it's kind of simple. Like, you claim stuff, and maybe it's because I like to make complex ideas, but,
So the game, in the game, you can do a few different things. You can gather commodities from your own kingdom, from the lands around your kingdom.
And you theoretically could gather commodities from other people's kingdoms as well.
Oh, you can move into other people's areas.
Right.
Okay.
But I would say that if you did, that would probably mean that you were at war with that person.
Mm-hmm. You could work out treaties and work out alliances, right, and things.
Yep. Yeah, one of the other ideas was you could have alliances.
Yeah.
So
allow each other to work from each other's lands. You can send your people to the market. So you can gain commodities that way.
Yep.
You can send your people to the market to buy commodities,
mm-hmm,
or trade commodities. You can trade directly with another player, mm-hmm, I guess. Or buy directly from another player without going to the market.
If they wanted to, yeah. That's something I think would need to be open.
Right.
You could trade if you wanted to, but right, it's kind of like, you could become very controlling with the market.
Mm-hmm.
You could start pumping a bunch of something people don't need into the market,
mm-hmm,
and buying all the stuff people do need.
So, because right, like you said, it's not just an endless supply in the market. It's
right.
The only thing for sale is what other people have already sold.
So if I'm good at, well, there would be, like I said, every season you get a base stuff.
Right.
But, if I make weapons and, mm-hmm, you have to be a house that's not so good at that, a kingdom, I could buy all the weapons out of the marketplace and just, mm-hmm, hoard them. Which makes you not as good at war and me way better.
Mm-hmm.
So, now maybe if I'm going to try and win by force. So, I feel like there needs to be a point system involved.
There would have to be to determine who's the winner.
But I kind of...
It seems like there should be some kind of a fame or a prestige or an honor system in gaining honor points or honor cards as you do stuff, because then you could accumulate those, and when the game ends, based on how much honor or prestige you've collected by the end, that's how you, whoever has the most of that wins, is how I would think of it.
I like that.
Rather than having to assign a score or point value to stuff as you get it,
right,
I it seems to me like, since you're the leader of the king, the monarch of a kingdom, you want people to honor you and respect you and be in awe of your power and of your prestige. And so you would, as the game goes on, you would want to be doing things to impress people and to be powerful and,
right,
and known in the world.
And maybe like for every battle you win, or every time you,
yeah,
whenever you claim a territory, you gain one prestige.
Right.
So how would you track that then? The simple way would be to put a track on the outside of the board.
Yeah, but you've got four different boards.
So that would never work. Okay. Well, actually, yes.
You could each have your own track.
That's true.
One on each board.
But, you're talking about a large number. You could be getting into the hundreds.
Yeah.
So.
You could, You could just use honor cards. You could just have something as simple as little tokens. You'd have to have some kind of tokens to use for money, as a currency,
Right.
So you could also have some kind of a tokens for honor.
Right.
Honor points.
And I was thinking, too, each kingdom would start with a different amount of wealth.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And a set number of resource, of commodities.
Mm-hmm.
So that would kind of automatically skew the balance of the game,
Mm-hmm.
The idea is it would all balance, because the kingdom with less commodities might have more gold to start with.
Yeah.
And therefore they would they would be able to buy more. Maybe they're maybe you have one group that's like the merchant group, right? So basically like all they're going to do is buy from the marketplace. They're going to produce hardly anything.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if they've got bonuses to that, to where they can get things cheaper,
mm-hmm,
that I think balances out. But there's an easy way to screw them by trying to stop them from getting anything from the marketplace.
Right.
So
yeah, there's a lot of potential here. That could be cool. There's a lot of work to be done, though.
Right.
Yeah. But I like that a lot. I like that a lot. All medieval themed, it sounds like.
Yeah. And I, mm-hmm, think, I was putting together some ideas for houses, like, one would focus on, like, magic, and one would focus, mm-hmm, on, being... like an honorable house that did, like, mm-hmm, in that type of thing. One would be like a warmonger, and, mm-hmm, maybe one would be more tribal. Mm-hmm. And that was something, one of the other ideas I had with this was, what if there were like wandering tribes that you could hire to fight for you.
Oh, you know? That you have to, yeah.
Like, you know, if whatever tokens you have for your people, if you had an extra color, a fifth color, mm-hmm. like a gray or something, those could be pre-placed on the board.
What if you're trying to set yourself up as some kind of deity, and you're gaining honor and respect and admiration from the population, because they're trying to... my phone's ringing, sorry.
Like, what does that say?
Because they're trying to you're trying to set yourself up as a deity, as the new god of the lands, and so you're doing these things to build your church, or that could be a goal. I don't know.
I do like the prestige thing though. I think that that's an interesting way to mark the winners. You know, about that, the prestige thing. The only thing I don't like about it is I don't like games where halfway through it's very obvious who's going to win.
Right? Yeah, I'm with you on that.
That's a benefit to Stone Age.
Right, because cards go face down right away.
Yeah, like you get points during the game, and then at the end you get these mystery points that if you're, you know, good at counting cards, you might know what you're going to get. If you're not, you may have no idea what you're going to get.
Yeah, and that's why I say honor. I was thinking that specifically. If you had cards, prestige cards or honor cards, you as you get them, you could be required to put them face down somewhere, you know?
Right.
Just kind of put them away, and you might want to keep that secret. You know, you could do the thing like that Gravediggers game that we talked about before, where you have a screen that you keep your money behind, so nobody knows how much cash you have.
That could be true too.
If you want it to be secret like that, yeah.
So I think the game's got a lot of potential. I mean,
you could probably pretty easily reskin this as like a sci-fi outer space kind of thing. With different alien races hopping between planets.
Yep. You know what, another idea could be, what if you set this up as a tile-based layout?
Uh-huh.
So you've got your castle tile, or your space station, whatever, you know, and it ends up in the corner, your corner, right? Mm-hmm. But all the other tiles aren't set. You're really good at making weapons, but all the stuff to make weapons is nowhere near you. And the only preset thing is the market goes in the center.
Oh, yeah. I like that. So everybody starts with their castle tile and some lands around it, which might be a 3x3 square. Right. And then you just randomly fill in the blanks with everything else with the market in the center. That could be a neat way to set up the board randomly every time.
So that way you kind of never know what's whatever. Yeah. So,
you know, there's a lot of different ways to skin this. I was just thinking you could also do it like as an Old West kind of thing where... You're the leader, the sheriff of the town, or right. You'd be the mayor of a town in the Wild West, or you know, you could make it as a gothic Cthulhu horror game where you're each an elder god trying to subjugate the masses. And I mean, there's so many different ways you could approach this kind of concept.
Definitely. Yeah. So I think my favorite is still the idea of kind of the fantasy setting. It's I don't know. It's easy to relate to for a lot of gamers.
It is, yeah. I'm just trying to think that you know, if there's other ways you could, other terms in which you could think about that, maybe you could pull mechanics out of those other concepts that might work in this medieval idea.
The one thing that might be limiting is the seasons thing. Like, doesn't work so well in outer space.
No, you're right. Wouldn't work at all in outer space. And I like that a lot in the medieval setting because that can be a little more poetic or a little more epic theme.
Right.
Yeah, that probably still is the best way to do it.
And I like the idea. The seasons thing to me is one of the big selling points because
that's different.
It gives a really different level of unpredictability to the game because you know a new season's coming, but you don't know what it's going to be.
You're right.
And it could be great for you. You could be planning to attack someone and then boom, a good season comes up and raha.
Yeah.
So
I like that a lot too. I think the seasons are the kind of the big... The big catch, the big draw.
And that's why I kind of like to work that into the title somehow.
Right.
Just because, you know, I think it's kind of cool.
Kingdom Seasons is what you called it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a great name, but...
It seems like you should go for Seasons of.
Yeah. You know? That's probably better.
Yeah, Seasons of something.
Seasons of Love, you know, was in Rent. They sang that song.
Really? I don't know Rent.
Yeah.
I know of Rent, but...
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's my pitch this week.
I like it. I think there's a lot to do there. I think it's got a lot of potential.
Yeah, it's pricing wise, it'd be a big box game.
It's a big game, yeah.
Probably a decent amount of artwork. Though still probably less somehow than the zombie card game, I feel like.
Yeah, maybe.
But, again, you could set a higher price point for it because it's a big box game, mm-hmm. and people would get excited, hopefully, about that. Mm-hmm. A little less approachability.
Yeah.
Because it would be fairly complex. Because for a game like that to work, it kind of does need to be a little complex, you know?
You're right.
I mean, it can be super simple.
Mm-hmm. And there are people that are totally into those complex, detailed games, of course, yeah.
I like the idea for a game like that your options are kind of limitless.
Yeah.
There are so many things you can do on any given turn.
Mm-hmm.
And you can set up moves for 5 turns later, you know?
Right. I like that.
Yeah. So, that's what I got.
Okay. It's good, man.
Thank you.
I support that.
Thank you.
I would subscribe to your newsletter.
Oh, that's exciting to me. Because I would totally have a newsletter.
I bet you would. You're the kind of guy who likes to have a newsletter? I don't know where I'm going with that.
I don't know. I don't think I'd want to write a newsletter.
No, I wouldn't either.
It would get way too boring.
It's hard enough just coming up with a blog post now and then.
Yeah. You're better at that than I am, though. I'm telling you on the blog post. You're like, I wrote 4 blog posts. I'm like, what are you doing? I've written like 2.
Yeah.
I think I've written 3. And I'm pretty sure I wrote 2 of those because you wrote so many. I was like, I should write something.
All right, well, we should move on. Let's knock out a few plugs here and then call it a night. What do you say?
Sure. Why don't you go first with plugs?
While you come up with something?
Yes.
I wanted to plug anything and everything related to the Dresden Files. We watched the Dresden Files TV show, which was a Sci-Fi Channel series. It was only on for 1 season, which is a bummer. But it's on Netflix streaming. My wife and I watched it. I think it's only like 12 episodes. It was super good. Super good, fun, totally different. Kind of noir light detective story, detective show.
There's like magic involved.
But he's not a detective, he's a wizard. And it's cool. It's got a lot of style. The main character, Harry Dresden, is played by Paul Blackthorne.
Is he English?
I don't know. I'm not sure. Well, the character is American. I don't know if the actor's English or not.
Oh, the character's American.
The character's American, yeah. But he's great, he's fun, he's charismatic, it's super fun, easy to watch, it's super entertaining. On our trip to Mackinac that I mentioned a couple times here, we got the first audiobook. It's based on a series of novels by Stephen Butcher.
Mm-hmm.
We listened to the first novel, which is called Stormfront, and it's different. The book Harry Dresden versus the TV show Harry Dresden, they're about 70% the same character, and about 30% different, which is okay. I mean, the Harry Dresden in the TV show is great for the TV show world. The Harry Dresden in this book was great for the book world. There's some overlap, but they're not exactly the same. That's okay. It's still super. It was a super fun book. Super great fun story. I would rather read it. The audio book, I didn't really care for the guy who was doing the reading. I felt like he kind of messed up some of the characterization here and there. But that's a nitpick on that. The book was super fun. I'm looking forward to reading more of them. There's also Dresden Files RPG.
I've heard people that play that love it.
People love it, right. But I've also heard that if you want to play that, you need to play with a group of people where either everybody knows Dresden Files really, really well, or nobody knows Dresden Files at all.
Okay.
Because the people who really know the books are going to know everything there is to know about that world. And it's a really complex, detailed, full world. He goes into a lot of detail about the magic community in Chicago and in the world. It takes place in Chicago.
Okay.
Largely in Chicago. And these different bodies, the White Council and the vampires and all these different communities and political situations, and these magic artifacts. So people who know the books are going to get super in-depth into the role-playing game. They're going to know what they're getting themselves into. They're going to be able to manipulate that really well. And people who have never played or never read the books, and maybe even only ever seen the TV show, they're going to be like, I can do magic in a role-playing game. This is cool. You know? And if those people are playing together, that would be a nightmare. It would be a terrible idea. But that said, I mean, this is what I've heard. This is what I've heard somebody else say. I haven't played the game myself, but I would love to try it sometime. Hopefully we can play it at Gen Con, maybe.
Yeah.
Dresden Files, it's all excellent, good stuff. Big thumbs up.
Excellent. Well, while you were pitching that, it made me think of what you just mentioned, which is Gen Con.
Yeah.
I'll plug Gen Con, which is coming up.
Yeah.
We go there every year. It's super fun. You can try a lot of new games. Mm-hmm. I probably buy 75% of my games at Gen Con.
Yeah, throughout the year. Me too.
Less now that there's Kickstarter, because I've been buying more on Kickstarter, but still, I mean, I buy most of them at Gen Con.
Mm-hmm.
It's in Indianapolis. It's in August. It's mid-August. Mm-hmm. I think it's the 16th it starts now.
Yeah, sounds 16th
right. That's a Thursday through the Sunday, right. whatever that 20th, is. 20th, probably, yeah. 4 days later. You should go. If you like games, if you like fun, you should go. It's an awesome, awesome thing.
It's 4 days of nothing but games and hanging out with good people.
Yeah.
And it's a good time. Downtown Indianapolis is a cool downtown.
Very nice downtown, yeah. Yeah.
We should probably also mention the Gen Con Social that we are proud sponsors of.
Yes.
Do you want to say a little bit about that?
Yeah, the Gen Con Social is a gathering of podcasters and friends at the Rock Bottom Brewery, I think they're. You can check out more at GenConSocial.com. It's a good thing they did it last year, and it's gotten bigger this year.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, tickets may not be on sale anymore.
They're
probably sold out. But put on your calendars for 2013 then, if it's too late for now, because I think you'll enjoy it. We went last year, and we had a great time. We're both planning on going this year again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's my plugs right there.
Good stuff.
So,
right on. Well, I think that'll about wrap us up for tonight. We'd like to thank everybody for listening to Building the Game. Please check out our website at buildingthegamepodcast.com and leave us some comments. You can send us an email by sending it to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is @podcastbtg. We would love it also if you could log into iTunes and give us a 5-star rating, please. We would love that. That would be so fantastic. And we would love it also. We love everything that you do for us. We would love it if you could come back and join us every week as we share our new ideas and what we've learned as we go on this crazy journey of becoming game designers. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
Let's turn it off. Let's hear what it sounds like when we turn off the air conditioner. Ready?
Yep. It's already getting hot in here.
You've been listening to Building the Game, a proud sponsor of the Gen Con 2012 Evening Social.
Are you going to Gen Con and want to hang out with your favorite podcasts and friends? Come to the Gen Con 2012 Evening Social for dinner and a party on Thursday, August 16th.
Find out more details and get your tickets before they're sold out at GenConSocial.com.